It seems that a teenager told his father, there's trouble with the car. And he says, oh, what's wrong? And he says, there's water in the carburetor. And the father says, water in the carburetor? That's ridiculous. That can't be. The son insisted, believe me, there's water in the carburetor. His dad started to get kind of irritated. It just can't happen. All right, you don't even know what a carburetor is. Show me, I'll go look at it. Where's the car? And the son said, in the pool. And so that's when you might say, seriously? When I first heard that word, seriously, it was an episode of Grey's Anatomy, and one of the main characters, Meredith Grey, said it. And as soon as I heard it, I loved it. You know, like, seriously? I just loved it. Because it packs so much, you know, in just one little word. So instead of saying, you've got to be kidding me, or are you serious? Seriously? You know, it's a great word. It's a great word. And when we think about serious and you've got to be kidding, typically when somebody says seriously, it's not a laughing matter. Usually it's something that's not very funny. The car in the pool is an example. Well, what happens when we're serious, when there is something that's going on? You know, Richard didn't even blink an eye. He just, you know, kind of tapped it, went exactly what was, and went right on, and it was fine. But sometimes when we're serious, we just sort of focus in. You know, somebody tells you, now get serious. Okay. You know, and you get serious, and you focus, and you, well, what happens to possibility when you do that? You know, possibility is like this, you know? And serious is like this. Maybe we want to look at seriously and possibility and see if the two are compatible. Possibility is the theme that we've been working with for all of last month, and we'll continue this month. Our theme for this ministry for this year is realizing expanding possibilities. And most of us agreed that, yes, we'd like to do that for the ministry and for ourselves, to realize expanding possibilities. So we're looking at possibilities. We've been working through a book, The Art of Possibilities, which tells us then that we don't have to be born lucky, or we don't have to just know this stuff. There are techniques that we can use that will expand our ability to, as we said, live in the universe of possibility, instead of that world of measurement. Because in the universe of possibility, like that shoe salesman we talked about before, that went into a village in Africa and noticed two of them, you remember I said this before, but one of them said, we can't sell anything there, nobody wears shoes. The other said, all kinds of possibilities, nobody wears shoes. So it's how we look at the world. Do we look at it as possible or not? So at this point in our study of The Art of Possibility, we come to a section in the book that points out a couple of blocks, things that might be blocking us from living in the universe of possibility. And the first one is taking ourselves so seriously. And the second is resisting what is. I think both of these are very common. We kind of do them without even realizing what we're doing. Let's look at the first one, taking ourselves so seriously. There's a story that I want to share with you that I found in Chicken Soup. This is a story that, shoot, I just forgot his name. Norman Vincent Peale, the guy, How to Make Friends, you know, that guy. So this is one of his stories that he was telling. Ken Blanchard, one of the authors of Chicken Soup, is the one who wrote it down. So this is his story. He says, one day I was walking down the street when I saw my friend George approaching. It was evident from his downtrodden look that he wasn't overflowing with the ecstasy and exuberance of human existence, which is a high-class way of saying George was dragging bottom. Naturally, I asked him, how are you, George? While this was meant to be a routine inquiry, George took me very seriously, and for 15 minutes he enlightened me on how bad he felt. And the more he talked, the worse I felt. Finally, I said to him, "Well, George, I'm sorry to see you in such a depressed state. How did you get this way?" That really set him off. "It's my problems," he said. "Problems, nothing but problems. I'm fed up with problems. If you could get rid of all my problems, I would contribute $5,000 to your favorite charity." Well, now, I am never one to turn a deaf ear to such an offer, and so I meditated, ruminated, and cogitated on the proposition and came up with an answer that I thought was pretty good. I said, "Yesterday I went to a place where thousands of people reside. As far as I could determine, not one of them has any problems. Would you like to go there?" "When can we leave? That sounds like my kind of place," answered George. "If that's the case, George," I said, "I'll be happy to take you to Woodlawn Cemetery, because the only people I know who don't have any problems are dead." "That's true." "That's true. There's a phrase that says, you aren't getting out of this alive. You know, none of us are. You know, we are all going to be sitting in that cemetery, and so life happens. So taking ourselves seriously. Sometimes we do take ourselves so very seriously, and what the author says is that we need to lighten up. Lighten up. Now, I find a lot of what's in that book, the vernacular is unity-ish, but just with different words, you know. So when we say lighten up, we have a meaning for that. We talk about our light every week. And so when we say lighten up, it's also to let that light shine through. But in the book, they talk about two selves, a calculating self and a central self. So in this effort to lighten up, we think about these two selves. Now, again, looking at unity in the way we talk about people, the calculating self might be thought of as the human self, the ego. Okay. Where does the calculating self reside? In the world of measurement. Remember, we talked about there's a world of measurement and a universe of possibility. The calculating self is the one who lives in the world of measurement. And that person's life view is, life is about making progress, striving for success. And we've already talked about that, how if you are in the world of measurement and being a calculating self or a human self or an ego self, we might be mostly interested in what kind of car we're driving or which neighborhood we're living in or how much money we're making or, you know, any of those outward things that we use as status symbols, as indicators of how well we're doing or not. You know, that's one of the characteristics of life view. It talks in here about a question that one could ask. So how do we know if we are living from our calculating our human selves versus our higher self? The question is, what would I have to change for me to be completely fulfilled? What would I have to change to be completely fulfilled? So think about that for just a moment. In your life, what would you have to change to be completely fulfilled? You don't have to, I mean, if you could answer if you want, but you don't have to. But think about that, because when you go in and start looking at what it might be, what you're going to find is that thing that the ego is most threatened by very often. So it can be a really good way to zero in on what might be holding us back from living that universe of possibility, what might be holding us back. Sometimes we're not even aware that could be there. So that's the calculating self, living in the world of measurement. There's a central self. We might call it the Christ self. And that self lives in the universe of possibility. The book talks about the central self as being the creative nature of ourselves. Scripture tells us, does it not, that Jesus says, with God all things are possible. when we are in that place of oneness, if we are in alignment with that higher self, we can do more, we can be more, we can feel fulfilled. It's a much, much different place, much, much more expansive, much more powerful. In that space, rather than be like George, we might well be creating things, solutions. We might be thinking, okay, this is a problem right now. How can I come to a resolution? What resources do I have? It's a mistake to think that if we are in our higher, you know, living from our higher selves, that we don't have problems. We do. There's always stuff out there. The thing is that we are better able to deal with them. We are calmer. We are much better able to not be afraid and to dip into resources and so forth. So, if one of the blocks is taking ourselves so seriously, we can think about where do we want to be coming from? It's kind of like, who do we want to be in charge? Do we want that human self, that ego self, to be in charge? Or do we want the central self, the Christ self, to be in charge? I've never been one to say that we want to just eliminate ego. We don't, because ego does some good stuff for us. And our human selves, if you've ever seen the movie Michael, you know, Michael thoroughly enjoyed his human experience. Remember, he had a bowl of cereal and he just kept dumping sugar on it. There's a lot to be said for the human experience, you know, so that's not bad. It's just, if we can live under the direction and guidance of that Christ self, we're going to be much more fulfilled, we're going to be much happier, we'll be much more in that universe of possibility. Now, the second thing is resisting what is. Byron Katie has a whole work. I mean, we could spend a month just on that topic. Resisting what is. Her book is called Loving What Is. And it's... most of the time, what's happening isn't what causes us pain. It's our resistance to what's happening. Our upsetness, our fear, our anxiety about what's happening. If we can be in that Christ self, remember, then we can be calm. We can go, okay, I know that here we are right now, and this is not comfortable, but it can be different later. But when we resist what is, we set ourselves up to suffer. The idea in this resisting what is, what we want to do is be present to what is happening without resistance, allowing ourselves to feel all of our feelings about it, not make ourselves right or wrong, and just observe them, but just accept, here, this is what it is. I may not be happy about it, but there you are. It is what it is. The first part of being better able to do this is to be able to recognize the difference between facts and our beliefs and our assumptions about what is. Who is old enough to remember the show, TV show, Dragnet? A few of you. Yeah, some of you. Yay. Joe Friday, if you remember the detective, his favorite phrase was, just the facts, ma'am. Straight face, you know. And the woman would be going into her story, and he'd say, just the facts, ma'am. Oh, okay. So he'd write down the facts. We aren't so good at that. Unless we really practice at just the facts, what we weave into all of it is our responses, our reactions, our feelings, our emotions about what's happening. If somebody speeds down a street, my street, if I'm outside and a car speeds down the street, my reaction is anger, because I don't want people speeding on my street because I know there are kids around. You know, the facts are someone is going fast. I recognize I put my own stuff in it. My judgment is that they shouldn't be doing that, and they shouldn't. You know, they should. But I put my own stuff in it. And think about how many how many life situations we go through every day. And instead of just observing, we are mixing it up with our own feelings, our own judgments, our own beliefs about what is happening. And some of those can make us very unhappy. I think that often what happens is I'm guilty of it, I think most people are, from time to time anyway, is if there is something that I believe, to believe that, well, everybody should believe that. Everybody should believe that cars shouldn't race down a street. I might have forgotten what it's like to be 16 and just have my driver's license. You know, it's still not right, but and that's a silly kind of, well, not a silly example, but think about all of the judgments that we make, because this is the way I think, everybody should think the same way. And yet we are all so different. We have all come from our own set of experiences. We all, there was an interesting experience I had when I was in school, night school, college, and it had us go through a list of words, short list of words, weren't a lot of them, but the way we responded to the first definition that came to mind had a lot to do with our personal makeup. So the word pot, you know, well, mine was kitchen. It was, I cook with the pot. Well, you know, others didn't have that first impression. they had something else. and there were many words like that, you know. So we can't assume that people are even hearing the same things that we are, much less experiencing them the way that we do. So if we really want to be open in this universe of possibility, is to be aware and observant of what is, just the facts. The book has some to-dos that I thought were pretty good. If we really want to do this well, to learn about this resisting, you know, to stop resisting what is, first we need to, there are three of them. First, we need to clear the shoulds. Who, I have tried to eliminate the word should. Anybody else? I don't think there's any good for the word should. You should do this. Well, what does that set up? It sets up immediately something in us to go, part of us is like, I know I should do that. The other part is that I'm not going to. Make me. So I try not to deal with the word should. And I think everybody has that same kind of reaction. There's should, don't should. The second one is what they call close exits. Escape, denial, and blame. Okay, so there's something that's happening. One exit is escape. And I've been guilty or I've been guilty of, okay, I don't like this, and I'm gone. just escape. Now sometimes that's a good thing to do, but sometimes if it would be worthwhile, if it would make a life situation better if you stay, maybe we shouldn't be trying to escape and leave. Denial. I've started watching a new series on Netflix. It's called Nurse Jackie. Anybody watch that one? Yeah, I like it. It's about a nurse. It is really well done because I don't think it gives anything away, because right away you figure out that she's hooked on opiates. So but it gives such a well-rounded view of her and her life. She is an excellent nurse. You know, she's very caring and it just, she is an excellent nurse, and she's totally addicted and does things. I catch myself watching, oh, don't do that. No, don't do that. And she does it. So she does things that I really think she shouldn't do. There's that word. Because of this addiction that she's doing. Denial, at this point in the series, she has not really owned up to the fact that she has a problem. You know, she's apparently in complete denial. There's like 6 seasons. I think I'm only in season 2, so maybe she will. But as of right now, she's in denial. How many times do we deny that that something's a problem. I mean, I've heard it so many times. Oh, I can quit smoking anytime I want to. Or I can quit drinking anytime I want to. Oh, I like to shop. There's no problem with that. But you know. So, yeah, my closet's got a lot of clothes that have labels that have never been taken off. You know, I don't have a problem. Denial is one that can sneak in. The third one, blame. Not my fault. You know, this happened, but it's not my fault. Sometimes I've heard it, people do that so much that it becomes ludicrous, you know, what they're saying. It's not my fault. Seriously? You think it's not your fault? How can that be? I once knew a woman who was trying to figure out who she could sue. She left her purse in the back seat of the car, and the car was broken into, and it was stolen. So she had gone to the mall, and in whatever store she had gone to, she was trying to figure out how to sue the store because her car was broken into. And I thought, you left your purse in the back seat. It's not too hard to figure out. So, oops, my shoe just came off. Seriously? Not my fault. That rug. So blame. Blame is something that you know, kind of comes to us really quickly. So resisting what is. Both of these blocks to expressing ourselves, being more, living in the universe of possibility, are things that are so very common. But if we practice, I think that we can get better at living in the universe of possibility. It is so pervasive, I think, some of these habits that we have, these patterns that we have developed over time, that it would take some effort. So my invitation to you is, if you do want to embrace possibility, if you want to step into and live from that universe of possibility, seeing what can happen instead of looking for the reasons it won't, if you want to be there, you can keep, you know, kind of follow these practices that have been laid out. And today we have two more. You know, one is to not be resistant to what is, and the other is taking ourselves so seriously. We are magnificent beings. We are created in the image and likeness of our Creator. We have all of the resources available to us at any time. All we need to do is remember and step into that possibility.